Good morning, everybody. Time now for the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Thank you very much for listening. We ask that you hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour, and then you're certainly invited to give us a call, make a comment or a question for our guest today. The number to call, if you want to jot it down now, is 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live. Now, time to welcome our guest to KAJO Radio today. Returning is Scott Hyde, Director of Community Corrections here in Grants Pass in the county. Scott, welcome to the microphones of KAJO. Glad to have you here.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate being here.
All right. Can you define for us what community corrections really is? Because if someone hears that, I'm sure they're going to say, well, what exactly are we talking about here when we say community corrections? We're not talking the jail specifically, are we?
No, we're not the jail. We do get that question a lot. One of the first things people say is, are you guys the ones with those vans out on the side of the road picking up the litter? And we are.
Yeah.
That's one part of what we do. Yeah. So we, our primary job is to supervise individuals in the community, those people who are released from prison. So the Department of Corrections after serving a prison sentence. Or the individuals who come through our local circuit court. They either pled to or were convicted of a crime, and then they were sentenced to a period of probation. So you hear the terms probation, post-prison supervision, parole. Our office is responsible for the supervision of those individuals who are placed on probation and post-prison supervision. We got a couple of other divisions within our overall department. So as I mentioned, the folks who pick up trash on the side of the road, they also do some wood splitting stuff. They do a lot of work for ODOT. They do other work for the city. They go out and they maintain lawns. They weed eat. They mow. That's what we call our CAPS division, our Custodial Alternative Programs division. Another section that we have is our Correctional Counseling division. So we have three, just about to be four, correctional counselors who provide what is known as cognitive behavioral therapy to individuals who are under our supervision. And they attempt to target the way that people think about life and allow them to make decision. Hey, the way that I think about things, my belief system that I have, does that serve me beneficially over time? And if the answer is yes, great. If the answer is no, and I want to kind of change that downstream behavior, then we're going to look at the way that we see things. And part of cognitive behavioral therapy is kind of reframing that. So we have the correctional counseling division. We have our custodial alternative programs division. And then we also have our support division, who handles all of our administrative work. We have somewhere in the neighborhood, it kind of fluctuates depending on budget time, and then, you know, just attrition through retirement stuff. But we generally have between 35 and 40 FTE in our shop down there.
Community 30 to 40 full-time people.
Yep.
It is a significant division here, and one that doesn't get a lot of press. I guess that's a good thing.
I take it as a good thing. Yeah. We try to view ourselves as quiet professionals. You know, we don't want to be on anybody's radar. We want to come in and provide a good product, do a good job, and promote community safety and offer up the opportunity for reformation for those who are in our system. And we try to find a balance and do that, the best that we can without people taking too much notice.
Lots to talk about here with this division here. The first thing I want to talk about is, and I was aware that the people out picking up trash alongside the highways came under your division, but I wasn't aware of all the things that they do. And you just ran off a list of things here. Who decides who gets the help?
So, yeah, that's a good question. So part of that custodial alternative programs is like if somebody gets sentenced, right? So let's say that they go to circuit court, they get sentenced to 30 days of custody time for whatever the crime that they were convicted of is. So what happens is they'll come into our shop, and then the good folks that we have in our CAPS division will run them through an assessment, and they will determine what is an appropriate placement for them to serve those 30 days. Now, those 30 days don't all have to be spent in jail. They could be, right? But another alternative is
– So these people aren't necessarily coming out of the jail to do these jobs?
Yes and no. So – let's divide it up into two groups. So the first group would be the folks who are freshly sentenced out of circuit court. Those individuals would come to us without having gone to jail yet, typically, and then we would determine what's the best placement. A couple of options they have. They could go to jail for a period of those 30 days. They could spend those 30 days on our community crews, which is the vans we mentioned, mm-hmm. the people picking up trash and doing the work on the side of the roads and in various other places. Another option we have is home detention. So that's like when people think about like the little ankle monitor. So we can do that where we're going to monitor them on home detention for a period of time. And we have a couple of different methods by which we can do that. But those are kind of the general areas where people can go. Now, the second group of people that would receive some of those services would be individuals who, let's say they're already on supervision with us, and they received a sanction, right? So they went out and they violated the terms of their probation in some way, shape, or form. And let's say that their probation officer gives them a 15-day sanction. Those 15 days can also be broken up into any of those categories that I previously mentioned. So some folks coming out of jail, some people coming straight out of courts. And then the third group that I'll mention are the individuals coming out of DOC. So they're coming out of the Oregon State Penitentiary. They're coming out of any of the other correctional facilities that DOC runs. After having served their sentence, they reintegrate back into the community. And then we also provide them with a kind of a different set of supports, but very similar.
You mentioned several areas where they would go out and help the community. Who decides those areas here? Is it all done for the county or the city? Are there nonprofit individuals who could benefit from something like that? Would they contact you, or is that not in the bailiwick?
Yeah, so I think that's a. The simple answer is yes, and we provide services to a variety of different groups. So we have contracts with the city. We have we support county parks sometimes. We have contracts with ODOT for road cleanup on the side, you know. And then as needs come up, as there's kind of unique needs that pop up, we've done some work with several of the irrigation districts around here, cleaning up ditches and those sort of things. We have some individuals who go out and help the animal shelter get things cleaned up, that sort of stuff. The nice part is that our crews have a wide variety of skills. They do some, like I said, previously mentioned wood chopping, that sort of thing. So yeah, there's a lot of different things they can do. I will say that there are times where we receive phone calls from folks asking us to come paint things or do other things, and that's a little outside the scope. But
okay, that's I think that's what we were getting at.
Yeah.
Yeah, how broad is that scope?
Yeah. So I mean, I would say that we're going to contain it within this idea that we're going to be able to provide some level of lawn care type services. We also help. Another thing we do that I'm proud of, and our crews have worked really hard on, is a lot of the park cleanups. So if you have a group of individuals that come into the park, they set up shop, so to speak, you know, with tents and all their other things, and then if they vacate that space and leave some of those items behind, you know, somebody has to come in and help with that cleanup process. That's been something that we've also done. So generally, I'd say the bulk of our work is done with all the local municipalities, either the city, the county, or the state, and we have ongoing contracts with those entities, and that's where probably 90% of our work comes from. That being said, we are flexible, and if things pop up and if people think, hey, this is something that maybe they could help us with, give us a call. We'd be happy to take a look at it.
Now, you outlined where a lot of these individuals come from, whether it's out of circuit court here locally, out of the jail, out of the Department of Corrections. Are you dealing with some pretty tough people out there?
It's a interesting mix of population.
I bet it is, yeah.
So, as far as kind of what we prioritize when somebody comes into our office is really figuring out where does the risk lie. Who are the individuals who pose the most significant threat to community safety? Clearly kind of identifying those individuals and trying to give them some fairly comprehensive wraparound services that gives us the ability to ensure that they are behaving themselves in the community. So right now, if you were to look at kind of our total breakdown as far as risk goes, and when I say risk, what we use as kind of a determinant of risk is the likelihood that this individual commits another crime, another felony crime within 3 years. We call that recidivism. And so what is the likelihood of recidivism, them going out and committing another crime? So if you were to look at the recidivism risk breakdown of our office currently, it's about in thirds. So, and we, right now we supervise somewhere in the neighborhood of about 900-ish people total in Josephine County. About a third of those are highs, about a third of those are medium, and about a third of those are low. And so that's kind of our risk breakdown that we have.
All right, let's deal with the recidivism part here. And I understand that your department has a pretty good record in reducing recidivism. And does that go to the, what, let me get to see if I can get the cognitive behavioral analysis. Is that where that change comes in? Are you redirecting thoughts?
Yeah, so I think it comes from a couple places, actually. I think it's one of the nice things about our program is we feel very fortunate to have that cognitive behavioral therapy program embedded in our corrections office. As of right now, we're one of maybe just a couple around the entire state that actually have a cognitive behavioral therapy program embedded in their actual organization. So that is a big piece of it. Everyone who is high risk at Josephine County, if you come into us, if we conduct our assessment, it turns out that you're a high risk to recidivate, you are automatically referred to our cognitive behavioral program. Our cognitive behavioral program is outstanding, very proud of it. We have wonderful correctional counselors who engage people who don't necessarily want to be there. They work really hard to kind of overcome what we call responsivity. What is it that this individual needs to actually get the information we're trying to give them? They do an outstanding job of that. That message is only as good as the level of accountability that's provided by the POs, essentially saying that if you don't go, if you don't engage in the services that are being offered, and you don't attempt to apply those in your life, there will be consequences for that. Meaning that if you don't show up, if you don't do the things you're asked, PO then says, all right, we're going to sanction you until you get tired of the alternative. And once you've reached that point, you decide, all right, I'm here and I'm going to learn. I'm going to take some of what they're offering. I'm going to attempt to apply it and see how it works. That's where we see the real change happen. And so I would say it's a comprehensive effort from our department. You got the POs on one side holding people accountable. You got the correctional counselors engaging them with a cognitive behavioral therapy. And then the thing that I'll mention that I think is kind of cool that really bridges the gap between those two divisions and where I think a lot of really good change happens is our POs, and I'll just say this, I'll say it out loud, our POs lead the state and their efforts towards creating what we call a comprehensive case plan. So this individual comes through the door, they meet their PO sits down with them. We give them this robust biopsychosocial assessment that it essentially looks at every facet of their life, determines what their risk is, determines what their need is, what is it that they need to mitigate that risk level, and then also what are the areas where we think they're going to struggle to receive what it is that we're giving them. Once they've conducted that assessment, they build a comprehensive case plan that addresses specifically those needs, and then they begin working on that responsivity piece of how is it that I actually get this individual to engage in the services that we're offering. So I think it's a comprehensive approach between both of those two divisions, and then you wrap those other services around it. And with all of those things combined, yes, I think that we've had a pretty good track record of reducing recidivism here in Josephine County.
All right. Well, you just sent kudos to all the POs, parole officers here locally, some of the best in the state. And from what I understand, you've got some of the best people in your division also in some of the best in the state. What kind of situation do you put your counselors in when they're dealing with a high-risk individual on the first or second contact? Now, do you carry any authority as a deputy, as a law enforcement official?
Yeah, so per Oregon revised statute, we are POs, not correctional counselors, but POs, are certified peace officers in the state of Oregon, mm-hmm. meaning that they carry arrest authorities. They take the oath of office to essentially uphold and protect, and they have the capacity to arrest people and take those individuals to jail when those individuals pose a threat to community safety or there's some substantial violation of the conditions of their supervision. And we need time out, we'll call that, in order to kind of reset their program, if that makes sense. So yeah, sworn peace officers, our POs are out there in the community. They wear external carriers. You'll see them. They got all the TAC gear. It says parole across the back. They carry guns. We do all the things. We just focus all of our efforts specifically on people who are on supervision. If you are a citizen in the state of Oregon, not on supervision, a probation officer has absolutely zero statutory authority over you, more so than any citizen would, right? Mm-hmm. If you come to the aid of another party or something like that, that you see something happening. But from a legal standpoint, yeah, our ability to engage with people, and to, at whatever level is necessary, is restricted to those individuals specifically on supervision.
What about your therapist?
So they don't have any arrest capacity. Nope. They are, simply there to engage people with cognitive behavioral therapy, as we mentioned. And they also see people individually in their office. And one of the things about our correctional counselors, they have done such a good job of learning how to engage people in their deepest, darkest times. the ability to relate to somebody in those moments, and then the ability to, I think, meet them where they're at and be realistic about what those goals should look like, and then just providing that continuing borderline unconditional support. Person comes through the door, they meet them every single day. That person may be having a bad day. They may have just relapsed. They may have just committed a new crime. They may have just come out of jail for 30 days on a sanction, whatever it may be. They may be in a rough spot. And they're met and they say, hey, we're going to pick up where we left off and we're going to figure out how we can do this thing better. They do all that with no guns. They do all that with no vests. They do all that with none of those capacities, that I mentioned that the POs have. And so with that, we take into mind, if somebody's creating a disturbance, say in one of those groups, it's dealt with very quickly by the PO. Mm-hmm. They call out the PO, say, hey, we got this individual. They're down here, and it doesn't appear as though they want to be here today, and they're making it pretty well known, and they're being disruptive to everybody else. POs are there in a heartbeat, walk down, remove that individual, and then we have another conversation with them that comes from a little different angle around, you have a choice here. You can either choose to engage in services, or you can then be prepared to deal with whatever the consequences of not doing that are. Oftentimes it's handcuffs, sometimes it's jail, sometimes it's work crew, whatever it needs to be, until we can get to a level of motivation where they do want to engage in those services.
Is it one-on-one, or did I just understand you to say that there was a group session?
Oh, it's both, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's both. So we have a variety of groups. I think right now we're running – the last time I looked at the schedule, I want to say we're running somewhere in the neighborhood 6, 7, 8 groups a week. And then each counselor, when we're fully staffed, meets with the people in our program. They meet individually with each person once a month. So they have a half-hour individual session where they can do some additional skills building around what are the particular areas they need a little extra help in. And then in those group settings is where they really deliver the cognitive behavioral piece, where they go through a standardized curriculum. Most of our curriculums come from the University of Cincinnati, who's kind of the leader in correctional intervention from a cognitive behavioral standpoint. Most of our curriculums come through them. And then they usually in the afternoons, people after they get off work, they'll come in. Groups last about hour and a half, something like that. And then they'll go through whatever it is they're working on that day. And then folks will be out the door and on with life.
All right. Fascinating so far. I had lots to talk about here, but I've got just to take a little break here because I have some bills to pay, too. We'll be right back with Scott Hyde. Welcome back, everybody. Community Corrections Director Scott Hyde is with us here today talking about what goes on really behind the scenes and some of the efforts that his organization takes to reduce the recidivism in the legal system. You're dealing with just under 1,000 people here on a monthly basis here with a group of 30 to 40 people on staff full time. What is your biggest challenge right now?
You know, it's, we live in an interesting, in an interesting world. And so technically our department, is our entire budget's built from, pass-through dollars coming from the Department of Corrections. So community corrections statewide, our total budget, is encapsulated in the full Department of Corrections budget. It's kind of its own little line item within that bigger, much larger budget. And so there are counties around the state where they will take those state dollars, and then they will add maybe general fund dollars to them or levy fund dollars to them, whatever they may be. But we are solely funded through those DOC pass-through dollars. And one of the things that we find very interesting is essentially just trying to keep up with whatever piece of legislation comes down. The laws are changing on a regular basis. And oftentimes within those kind of broad reform bills, you will find things very specific to community corrections in the way that they want us to conduct our business. And so we find ourselves on a regular basis attempting to adapt and change and develop new protocols and develop new policies and figure out how it is that we're going to continue to accomplish the same task, but now within kind of this new set of guidelines that are being handed down to us. So that's challenging.
You put it very well. I would have said jumping through hoops.
Yeah, I think some people could easily see it that way. Yeah.
Okay. But in essence, what everybody here listening within the sound of KJO Radio is no general fund dollars are coming out of the county to fund your department, which I imagine is pretty significant payroll.
Yeah. So we've been very fortunate. And one of the nice things about that is it does free up general fund dollars for other departments, you know, and so we've tried really hard to kind of stick within that live within our means, so to speak. We identify what is going to be that dollar amount that we see coming down from DOC, and then we plan accordingly and pretty rigidly around whatever that number is, you know. And so with everything that's happening budget-wise, we try to be that one department that doesn't come asking for things. Now, if anybody wants to give us money, we'll always take it, you know. But at the end of the day, we understand that it's there's people that can definitely use it, and we've been fortunate in that regard. And again, we've kept our department at a size makes it so that we generally can live within that DOC budget. And we see the writing on the wall too, right? So the amount of money that we get from DOC is directly linked to the number of people we supervise. And we know what the capitated rate, what we call a capitated rate, the dollar we get per individual per day. So I can sit there on my phone and pretty much do the math in real time as I watch our population go up and down, and I know what our check from the state's going to be. And so we're able to kind of have some pre-planning as we get ready to head into budget season, you know, and just knowing that, you know, budgets are super tight for everybody. You know, we try to be conscious of that and do our best to be a good team player, and we try to secure as many grant dollars as we can from other places in the state, and our best attempt to use what we need and pass other dollars through to other county departments and community partners to help kind of support the greater good the best we can.
So your funding depends on the number of people that you serve, all right? Are we trying to reduce that or increase it?
Yeah.
It's a strange situation to be in.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because that's actually kind of one of the running jokes around the state, you know, with our current funding mechanism being on this capitated rate. They're like, well, we're getting punished for doing good.
Yeah.
Our whole aim is to like keep people off of the books, you know, to reduce recidivism, therefore not have them come back through the system. And yet that's a direct cut in my overall budget, you know. And so that's one of the things that they're working really hard on. So I'm part of an association, the Oregon Community Corrections, the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors, OACCD. And that is a group who is very active in attempting to work with legislators as well as DOC to kind of develop some sort of funding mechanism that's first stable, right? And that isn't so dependent on the ebbs and flows of the total population. But really does kind of some way subvert that idea that you are being punished for doing your job well. You know, and so they're back to the drawing board. There's actually a work group right now in the state that's trying to come up with some recommendations for the legislature by the time we go to the next long session. So hopefully we'll see some changes there.
Oh, well, I do hope you see some changes. At the same time, I hope someday you're out of business.
Yeah, you know what? If we're doing our job very well, we don't have a job. So.
All right. Well, at any rate, we're going to continue here. We're going to take a little break. Your news is coming up here momentarily. I do want to pass along one more time that on I-5 northbound milepost 28 in Medford, the northbound lanes are closed at milepost 28 due to a big crash there involving multiple vehicles. Long-term closure. Travelers are advised to detour at exit 24 or 27. Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in Progress, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment to our guest today, Scott Hyde from Community Corrections, the number to call is 541-472-1270. When you hear the sound of the phone sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live. Joining us in studio, head of Josephine County Community Corrections, Scott Hyde. And Scott, moving forward here, even prior to your presence and taking over a community correction, it was one of the best in the state, still maintains that way. Kudos to you and your staff for keeping it that way. What is the measurement that keeps what is the measurement that rates you that high, and what does it take to stay there?
A huge shout out to Nate Galleran, who was the director before me. And I think, me and him were in here chatting with you last time, maybe a couple of years ago.
Just before he left.
Yeah. Just before he went up to Washington County, where he's continued to do awesome things. But he really set a tone of excellence, I think, in our organization and, came in and we made the decision, several years ago that we were going to do the hard work, not easy work, but hard work, to get ourselves in a position where, we can deploy what we know gives us the best chance of being successful. To do that efficiently, to do that with regularity, and to do it with precision has kind of been where we've attempted to be. And so if you look at success metrics for community corrections around the state, there's a couple of kind of key things that we look at. Number one, the first piece around it is assessments in 60 days. How many people come into our shop and sit down and get that assessment that I told you about beforehand, that biopsychosocial assessment, that we identify what their needs and their risk are, and then obviously their responsivity.
Yeah, pieces. High, medium, and low.
Medium, and low, yes. And so how many of those people get an assessment done within 60 days? That's kind of the first metric that the state has really started looking at. Then after that, how many individuals have an active case plan, meaning that we have written out a specific plan that has actionable steps with a SMART goal attached, and that we have interventions, meaning that we have kind of tasks for them to complete on a regular basis. And are we checking that? Are we holding them accountable to that plan? Are we helping them develop skill sets to accomplish that plan? Do we realize that we need to revamp the plan? Maybe it's not quite appropriate. That's the good hard work that we do. And so those are two kind of key pieces that they look at from the statewide. Now, there's a whole host of other things administratively that they can look at. And as time goes on, they'll continue to refine those metrics. But for right now, do we get them assessed in 60 days? Do they have a current active case plan that's directly linked back to that assessment? So, and then obviously you have the recidivism piece, which I think, as we previously mentioned, historically we've done well compared to other, areas in the state.
Is that a measurement of success?
Yeah, I think it is. It's a measurement of success, in that it tells us how many people came through our doors and then how many of those people didn't come back. And as you mentioned before, that's the ultimate goal, right? And you know, we jokingly said, if you do your job too well, you'll work yourself out of a job. I have no fear about ever being without a job here, just simply because it's just, as we've come to look at it, it's just part of the human condition. We will never be shy of folks to supervise, no matter how good of a job we do.
I chuckle a bit, but, and you do too, but we've got to laugh occasionally. Although this is dead serious business.
It really is. You know, and looking again, kind of going back to those success metrics, and I really like to brag on the folks in our shop. When they first kind of came out with this agreement that we're going to get all these assessments done in 60 days, there was a lot of pushback around the state. There was a lot of different areas that said, you can't do that. That's too soon. There's too many moving parts. There's too many, logistics to have to navigate to accomplish that task within 60 days. We were one of those places that said, we're going to do it. If you give us the number 60, we're going to figure out how to do it. And we invested a lot of time and energy and resources into refining our process. And I can happily and proudly say that we are now consistently one of the leading agencies in the state. We have these set of dashboards where every community corrections agency in the state can look and see how other agencies are doing. And we are consistently kind of setting that benchmark for what success is. And I can just tell you, I looked at it maybe a couple of weeks ago. And we're always somewhere in the neighborhood of 85 to 90% of people coming through our door getting those assessments done within 60 days. The state average last time I checked was somewhere in that like 50 to 60 range, right? Which is good, because if you go back even a year, it was 30% statewide. And we have historically kind of held that line, and actually to the point where we've had a lot of other community corrections agencies from around the state call us and say, how do you do that? We want to know what's the secret sauce, you know, and it always starts with good people. And I say, we hire the best people. We hire the most dedicated. We hire the people who truly care about the work they do. And not to mention, not just caring, they got the skill sets to do the job. And when you combine those two things, you get a place like Josephine County Community Corrections that continues to perform at that high level, as evidenced by the metrics of success with the assessments. And then the other thing is the case plans. This is kind of the next iteration, I would call it, of community corrections statewide. Everyone's kind of on board with these case plans getting done. Now it comes down to, or I should say the assessments. Now it comes down to how many people actually have these case plans in place. And we have kind of an internal review audit process that we go through every couple of months to ensure that we're doing that. And we're currently, working on, with our county IT department, developing some analytics dashboards that would give us the push button ability in real time to know exactly what work needs to be done, who needs to be seen, what case plans need to be reviewed, what assessments need to be completed within the next set of days, which I think is greatly going to streamline a lot of our workflows, especially in our supervision level. So our managers and our supervisors spend a good deal of time just ensuring that we're getting those tasks knocked out. And I think this is really going to streamline that. So once we get that thing kind of online, I think you're going to see even better performance out of us. And yeah, so.
All right. The challenges for your department here in Josephine County, I would expect, are fairly high just in terms of what we've seen, the crime level rise here. So we've got a lot of offenders being contacted on a daily basis here. So what are the challenges here locally? Is it high? Is it low? Is it medium?
I definitely say it's high. Mm-hmm. You know, we have, so if you look at county, if you look at like county size compared to the number of people actually on supervision, you know, and we look at our comparable counties around the state. So for example, we have like our comparable counties would be something like Klamath, Umatilla, Polk, Benton, and probably like a Douglas and a Linn would be our comparable type counties. When you look at those counties, and the number of people that they have on supervision, and this, I can't say this is completely accurate to the, in this moment, but if you go back several months ago, I kind of ran the data on it. And if you look at the rest of those counties on average, Josephine County has twice as many people on supervision as the average for our comparable counties. And when I say comparable counties, I'm saying counties of like total population, as close as you can find within the state, right? So we go like three up and three down. If you take all those counties that have the closest population to Josephine County, on average, Josephine County has about twice as many people on supervision as those other counties. And so we do have this, we see a larger need, and I do think that it's regionally, you see the same thing. Jackson County, very similar. They have a large number of people on supervision, and I think there's a few different theories out there as to why that is, and I'm not going to pretend to know it. I can just tell you that from a data standpoint, I know that we are very busy, and so for that, we have to continue to try to refine our practices and figure out how to do it more efficiently.
All right. When people hear the term community corrections, I think they're probably thinking or visualizing prison guards or deputies or law enforcement. You are really not law enforcement.
No.
You're at the other end. You're trying to stop it from happening again. And we go back to recidivism. Is there a measure of recidivism here? Do we have a 90% chance of that person not offending again? What is there a measurement there that
it's about 37%?
About 37% is
total people through the door. Mm-hmm. About 37% of them will recidivate. Let's say over the last, and we call it like a running cycle. And so specifically statewide. And then Josephine County, it's right in that general ballpark.
So 63% won't.
Ish. Yeah.
63-ish.
Yeah, somewhere right in that neighborhood.
Is that good?
On average. It's pretty good. So a long time, if you were to look at the historical state average across the state, it's about 50%. And it's never really fluctuated too much from that line. We've worked really hard over this last little bit to kind of drive those numbers down. Now, there are a lot of factors at play. And I will be the first one to say that I don't necessarily think that recidivism is the best metric to measure success for community corrections. And the reason I say that is because there's just so many things that can influence that outside of community corrections, meaning that you could have a change in law enforcement staffing where you don't have as many deputies on the road. They're not out there finding people committing as many crimes, say. You could have another situation where the DA's office doesn't have as many attorneys prosecuting crimes. You could have some ordinance that comes down from a council somewhere that says, hey, we're no longer going to press on this or that. There's a lot of things that can influence whether or not somebody is actually convicted of another crime beyond just their behavior. And so for us, while we continue to use recidivism as a kind of a defining metric, just because we've never had anything better, and it is something we can put a hard number on, so I think a lot of people like that. We're now kind of shifting our focus towards like almost a harm reduction type model around if somebody comes onto supervision with us, when they first come in, what is their risk level? Let's say their risk level is high when they first come through the door. By the time they leave, did we reduce that overall risk level? Even if they went out and they committed another crime, if they were high, and we reduced them down to, say, a medium, that would be a measure of success. That would be a win for us, especially dealing with those super high-risk populations. There's a lot of them are what we call pre-contemplative, meaning they're not necessarily ready to change, and they're not necessarily ready to engage in the services that we offer, and we spend a lot of time and energy trying to get them to engage. And so if you take somebody who's very pre-contemplative and not wanting the services, and you get them from a high to a medium, I would consider that a huge win because it's directly related to community safety.
All right, let me deal into that one just a little bit here. So if I've got a risk level of high and I can reduce it to medium by the time they leave your service, but then they recommit a crime, that's a win. How are you gauging that? Is it a lesser crime Have they moved down in the level of seriousness?
Sure. So you have, and again, this is kind of a theoretical basis right now, and these are the conversations we're having at the statewide level around what do we really use to measure success in community corrections. But the answer to your question is yes. So you have, like a crime seriousness scale, right? And that's actually built into the sentencing grid that the courts use and the DAs use and that sort of thing. And so, you know, if we have somebody who comes on supervision and they're on for burglary, right? And it's armed burglary, use of a weapon, whatever it may be. That person came out of the Department of Corrections. And they come into our shop. We do a lot of good work with them. They go out and they recidivate. They get a PCS charge, let's just say, or they get a theft three for stealing something from safe or whatever ends up happening. We've still gone out and we've committed another crime, but the seriousness of that crime, the level.
We've gone from an armed burglar,
yes,
down to a shoplifter.
Yeah, and I'm not making any light of the fact that we still don't want people shoplifting. We don't want people taking things that don't belong to them. But if we're being realistic about the population that we're dealing with oftentimes, in my mind, I consider that a win. And I think there's a lot of people that would consider that a win as well.
All right. We're just flying through here, and there's just lots of questions. It's fascinating this morning. So I've got to take a little break here just to pay some bills. We'll be right back.
Come.
We're in the final minutes of the Tuesday talk show here. If you have a question or comment for our guest, that's Scott Hyde here from Community Corrections. It's 541-472-1278. We have time for a call or two if you so desire. Scott, we've talked about what your agency does, and we've talked about a little bit about law enforcement, both their levels and the district attorney's office. And we all know that certainly law enforcement levels are not where we want them here in Josephine County or in the city of Grants Pass or even in the DA's office. They're a little shorthanded too. How do you fit into the scheme of things? Are all three agencies there involved together?
Yeah, in varying degrees, the short answer is yes. You know, we work closely with the Sheriff's Department as well as the District Attorney's Office. They are involved. The Sheriff's Department, if they contact one of our folks out in the field, say, hey, this is what this person's up to, then it's going to be our job to determine, hey, how do we best address that behavior? So we have a lot of communication on that side of it. The other thing that I truly appreciate about our Sheriff's Department is they've been a wonderful partner for us. We run a treatment pod inside of the jail. We call it secure treatment. Which is a lot of times the only place we can get treatment to individuals who just aren't ready for it. People that's out running a gun, they're still in the middle of their addiction, they're still committing crime, they're absconding from supervision. We finally find them somewhere, they get lodged in jail. A lot of times that secure treatment pod is the only place that we can put them. And the sheriff's department, from the sheriff to the undersheriff to the jail commander on down, have just done, and just the staff there, have done an amazing job of helping us facilitate that program. It's one we've been very proud of. It's one we've used JRP or Justice Reinvestment Program dollars to fund that program here for, I don't want to say this, we're probably going on our fourth biennium of having that program. And the only reason that thing works is just because of the partnership we have with the sheriff's office and the jail. As far as the DA's office goes, same thing. We work with them very closely on all of our probation violations. So if we have somebody who receives what we call a downward departure, meaning that that individual could have went to prison based on their crime seriousness and their criminal history. If that person receives what we call a downward departure, meaning that they are essentially diverted from prison and brought to us, we work very carefully with our district attorney's office to ensure that we are holding that individual accountable, that we're continuing to promote community safety, and then on kind of this regular basis determine, all right, is this somebody that does need to go to prison, they're just not ready to be in the community, or is this somebody that we can give one more chance? Is this somebody we can wrap some more services around, and are we right on the edge of really getting this person to a place where they can make some positive change in their life? And our district attorney's office has been just phenomenal in that, being able to have those open conversations, meeting us wherever we're at, listening to what our ideas. You know, I've heard some stories around other parts of the state where not that open, and it's a very one-way communication. I can't say enough good things about the DA's office and their ability to work with us and try to figure out what's best for the individuals we supervise.
All right. It's just been fascinating to me to hear. One word that you mentioned, we really haven't dealt very much with it, and you said addiction. What kind of a situation does addiction present to you right now? Because obviously if they're in jail, they're theoretically not using. Is addiction the biggest problem for community corrections, for law enforcement statewide?
You know, I can speak to community corrections, and I can say that addiction in of itself is just an awful, terrible thing, and I think we all agree on that. And it manifests itself in a number of different ways, kind of how it tends to rear its head in our shop is we get somebody who's on supervision, we get them stabilized, we get them into some transitional housing, we get them into some cognitive programming, we even get them A&D services, we get them on the verge of having a job, really get them to the place where they're making some good quality decisions, you know, and they're learning to live life free, essentially, and self-sustaining. And then here comes addiction. One bad day, one bad thing sneaks in there, and next thing you know, they're back to this place where we began from. And so we find ourselves kind of in this repetitive cycle, and a lot of times kind of addiction is the thing that tends to bring us back to that place. And so with that, we do a lot of work around recognizing when somebody has that need and making sure that we're trying to get them as many resources available, whether that be through our local programs here, whether that be through a referral to residential. And then after they come back out, what are the things ongoing that we need to do to keep them sober? It plays a big role. And if we see, you know, with the 110 reform that we see coming through House Bill 4002, and now to where they're going to recrim the PCS cases, we could see that have a bigger impact on community corrections, meaning that we're getting people on supervision who are primarily drug addicted individuals, and that tends to be kind of their primary driver of crime. We'll probably have to do a lot of work around that and figure out how do we best address addiction.
Yeah. So you've just expanded your customer base.
We have. Yeah, you know, it's like I tell people, it's like it never went away. We've always done it. You know, if you go pre-110, we saw the same people. So they're just coming back to us.
Yeah. Yeah. So the skills that your people must have, then also drug recognition.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, I can say that sometimes it's much easier than it is, and other times. But one of the things that especially our POs and our counselors, you know, all of our counselors are certified alcohol and drug counselors, or they're working towards that currently. And our POs, they get to know these individuals very, very well. They see them on a regular basis. They talk to them daily. They understand all the facets of their lives, and they can begin to tell pretty quickly whether or not somebody's using. They start to see deterioration.
I've got about a minute left. What do people need to know about community corrections?
You know, we're here for Josephine County. Josephine County Community Corrections, under direction of the BCC, and the other interested parties, we always prioritize community safety. That's going to be the lens through which we make every decision. And we're always going to attempt to mitigate whatever risk the individuals under our supervision pose to the community. We start from there. And then once that's been addressed to the best of our ability, and we try to be very, very responsive to that. Once that's been addressed, then we'll figure out what is it that we can add to this person's life right now that gives them a better chance of, as we said before, jokingly, not coming back to see us. Because that's the ultimate goal. And so, yeah, if somebody's ever out there and you have ideas for us, or you have some thoughts, you have some concerns about anybody in our supervision, or you have some ideas around things that you would like to see us do, we're always open. Feel free to call, stop by. They have my information. We're always looking at how we can do things better and how we can best support our community.
How do we go about contacting you if we need to, or if we have that idea?
Yeah, so Josephine County Community Corrections, we're located at 510 Northwest 4th Street. It's between B and C Streets, 4th and 3rd. It's the old Washington School campus, big brick building right there. Phone number is 541-474-5165. You call that number, we'll get you to the person you need to talk to.
I want to thank you very much for your time today and your efforts here on the behalf of the Josephine County citizens. Scott Hyde with the Community Corrections Department here in Josephine County. Thank you. And everybody, stay tuned. News coming up after this.